Chapter 5. The next afternoon, San Giusto came into Itali's room with a special edition of the Courier Mercury. A single sheet, printed since the government presses had been burned on the night of the 13th, on some commandeered press, perhaps of Esby Verba's. The Courier Mercury contained no news from Paris. Nothing about suspension or reconvocation of the Assembly. Nothing directly about any event of August the 13th and 14th. Only a bulletin, dated the 12th, of the Grand Duchess' request to the Estates General, and a police notice to certain individuals considered illegal residents of the capital, who were hereby ordered to depart the Molson province by noon of August the 16th, 1830, after which time, if found in the city or province, they would be liable to arrest and imprisonment as conspirators against the government of the Grand Duchy. There followed, in smudged, badly set print, a list of 63 names. San Giusto read them out, hesitating and squinting, his foreign accent very noticeable. Breve, Jivan Alexis, Rasen, Luke, Yagove, Pierre Marie, Brelave, Thomas Alexis, Fabre, Raoul, Frenin, Jivan. They're out of date, Itali remarked. San Giusto went on. 20 or more names Itali knew as acquaintances, and some he did not know at all. Then, Aragon, Stefan Marie. Aragon? And the first deputy? Is Leven on the list? Count Haleska has heard that Leven was killed on Palaces Street. Go on. Palais, Tedor, Palais Salvete, Vernoy, Roche, Sode, Itali, Eccelse, Matthias Mark, Chorin Falesca, George Andre. Another deputy. San Giusto finished reading the list. There was a pause. Carante is not on it, he said. No. The old count had kept his servants out collecting what news they could, and bringing it to him and his two refugees. Carante was said to have been seriously hurt in the fighting on Palaces Street. There was no report at all of Brelave or young Vernoy. Even Aragon under ban, Itali said. That's a blow. He spoke rather unnaturally. He was sitting up in bed, one of the mighty beds of the Haleska house, with great goose-feather coverlets and curtains, like the stage curtain of the opera. He looked haggard and meagre, as if he had lost weight again, and even height. "You should get out of Krasnoy at once," San Giusto said. "There'll be no pardons henceforth." "If only I could get some word of Brelave. He will be in hiding or in jail. You can't wait to hear of him. You have only 24 hours. Will you come with me? I'm not on this list. You may be on another." "Almost certainly I am." San Giusto spoke with composure. "I'll wait a little," he said, "until all is quieter, and then go back to France. I'm going home. Come with me. For a while, at least." "Thank you, my friend. At a better time, when hospitality is not dangerous to the hosts, I shall come with great pleasure. As a favour to me, you can't try to cross the border now. You can get to France later, when things have quietened down. Of course, you'll want to go there. It's all over here. There's nothing for you to stay here for. But it's not safe to try to leave the country now. You can lie low in the mountains a while. We came out of this together. If I can keep you from getting arrested, it's one thing I can do. There's nothing else. Let me... Very well. I'll come with you. San Giusto broke in on the accelerating rush of words. Itari stopped, drew in his breath and said, Good. They were silent for a while. San Giusto was proudly relieved, but could not express his relief. If the stages are running as usual, the Southwestern Post leaves every second Friday, and the Eisner Post the next Saturday. This is what, the 15th? It would be the Post this week. 3 days to wait, then. And I don't think we can wait here. San Giusto shook his head. We can walk. How far is it? Not much over 100 miles. But we must start at once, to be outside the province tomorrow. San Giusto's injured hand had been bound up, and the arm put in a light sling to help immobilize it. You can't walk 100 miles with that, Itali said, in self-disgust, looking at the sling. Oh, I think so. But you, I think you're not well enough, Itali. The Count will lend us horses to Fontanasfere. 10 miles or so, it's in the Parana. We can walk from there, or wait there for the coach. Good. Have you any money? They stared at each other. I have some change, I think. In my room at the inn, I have a few kruna, but I don't want to go there. It's a risk. No, don't go there. The Count will lend us enough to get home with. My God, what a fool I am. Itali rubbed his hands over his face, and his still short, rough hair, with a laugh. The danger, the absurdity, and the hopelessness of his situation were at this moment both clear and meaningless to him. The important thing just now was that he not lose his friend, this brave, amiable man, along with the rest and the others lost, that San Giusto not be arrested. This was as far as his mind would go. He could consider his own risk only in terms of San Giusto's. Incapable of directly facing the possibility of himself being rearrested, re-imprisoned. He had no hesitation at all, asking Count Haleska for the loan of horses and money. And he joked with the old man, who was reluctant to let his refugees go. Old Haleska longed to defy the entire Austro-Hungarian Empire to trouble the guests of his house. He argued that neither of them was fit to travel, and that the police would never look for them here, under an old soldier's roof. Discretion is the entire extent of my valor, Count, Itali said. We'll run while the running's good. Tell George when he comes home. I think he'd applaud my variety of valor. Itali had got up in the late afternoon and dressed in the worn clothes, the old blue coat, that were now his sole possessions. He held himself very straight to convince Haleska and himself of his fitness. From time to time, he wondered how he managed to stand up and walk when he felt so deathly tired. How he arrived at decisions when he could not keep two ideas in order in his head. How he talked and laughed when all the time there was, in the back of his throat, the tightness of unpermitted tears. From moment to moment, he expected this specious vigor to run out, in which case he would no doubt fall flat on his face as he had done last night. And he wished earnestly that he could give up, cast it from him, as one tosses away a pebble, and lie down and rest. There was no more use in it. No point, no direction. But it made no difference. His thoughts and acts stayed chained to that rock of identity, of single, unmoved, unreasoning will, the will to remain himself. Once their course was decided, he and San Giusto had agreed that promptness would best serve both their own interest and their host's. So he rode, with San Giusto and a couple of Haleska grooms, down Tiponti Street, past the trees of the park and the silent Sinalio Palace, past the coachyard at West Gate, past the hotel where he had met Louisa, past the tenements and through the northwestern suburb, out onto the plain that lay dun and gold in the light of a summer evening, and on towards the hills. From the road above Colonna Mana, he looked back at the city on the curve of the river, a faint scattering of points of light in the wide grey sunlight. So delicate, it seemed one could take it up in the hand like a piece of silver gauze. They rode on, upward. Remote in the sky, over bare hilltops, the crescent moon hung for a while. It had set when they reached Fontanasfere. The air here, 1,000 feet above the river valley, was cool. Gulhelm Street was lit softly with coloured lanterns, fantastic among tree shadows. A few strollers passed. Open carriages rolled by. They put up at the first inn they came to. "It looks expensive," Itali said. But San Giusto said, "We will find one cheaper tomorrow." And he did not argue. He had noticed as he rode that his horse's ears seemed at times far off, yards away, at other times very near. The same was true of the stars, which now drew off together in a clump in the enormous barren sky, and now came up so close that he felt the cold prickle of their fire under the skin of his forehead and cheeks, a troubling sensation. They were given a room under the eaves. The only room he had free, said the innkeeper. The resort was full of vacationers escaping the heat of the city. "Yes, it is quite warm in Krasnoy," San Giusto said. As soon as the man left, Itali lay down and closed his eyes. San Giusto, in intense discomfort from his injured hand, swore a little. He asked some question, but Itali did not answer. He was not asleep yet and wanted to speak to San Giusto, but could not speak. He was nearly asleep, and comfortable enough now that he could lie down. Only very deep within him, at the depth below dream, the depth where he had lived for 2 years of solitary confinement, something remained stone hard, mute, in anguish. Everything was over, finished, gone. Only nothing was finished, nothing was done, and he must go on, go back, go home. Into exile. He lay still and saw before him in the darkness of his closed eyes the great quiet slopes of the mountains above the reflecting lake.